welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Secrecy and Revelation, the trip to America to secure a new life during the Chinese exclusion era, is the topic of this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Felicia Low, a filmmaker whose film Chinese Couplets tells her mother's story. The film tells this story of a childhood in rural China, the new identity to secure a passage to America, the fear of deportation if the truth were known, and a prosperous, successful life of an immigrant Chinese woman in Oakland, California. Chinese Couplets will be shown at the Mendocino Film Festival on Saturday, May 30th, 2015, at 10 a.m. in the village of Mendocino, California. When Felicia Low and I visited by phone from her home in San Francisco on May 17th, 2015, we began when I asked her to tell us about her mother.
Well, my own mother was a bit of an enigma to me from the time I was very young. Almost as soon as I could speak, she told me to say, "If anyone asks where I come from, say Hawaii." "Why, Mommy?" "You know," I asked, "why would your mother ask you to lie or say such a thing?" And she would never answer me. And I would say that that created or seeded in me a very curious child. You know, she made me who I am because oftentimes she really did back away or ignore the questions I would ask her, and they all seemed to stem around her early beginnings in her life. So, you know, you can really train a child to stop asking, because if the response is always going to be nothing, no answer, then you stop asking.
Yet a response like that foments a curiosity in children, as it obviously did with you and your daughter.
Yes. Well, in fact, on top of the mystery of my mother asking me to say she was from Hawaii, came a second thing that made me very curious, which was my name change. My father had our last name changed when I was about six. And so all of a sudden, one day I was Felicia Low. But before, I was Felicia Jew one day. And then the next time, after a court visit, I became Felicia Low. All of that was very confusing for a child, because the explanation my father gave was that it was for business reasons. Still, you know, that doesn't resonate with a kid. So between those two things, you're right. It did make me a very curious child, and eventually I would end up going into the field of journalism.
The movie Chinese Couplets, in telling the story of your mother, brings a lot of history about immigrants to the United States. The portion that caught my attention was the concept of hollow bamboo. Can you share with us what that is?
The term hollow bamboo, juk sing in Cantonese, was a phrase that was thrown at us, almost a derogatory term that some of the elder Chinese would call us American-born Chinese. And even then, it took me a long time to understand its full meaning or significance. But growing up as I did in Oakland, California, in the 50s, in really a Dick and Jane world, where on one hand, I could not see anything of myself reflected in the school books that I was reading or on popular media on television. And then having a mother and father who didn't speak too much about their past, and followed by these elders calling us Juk Sing, hollow bamboo, which it referred to the fact that you're sort of Chinese on the outside, but there's not much going on inside. You know, and I really felt like, how could I? Nobody was talking. So knowing where you fit in became a subtext of my life, and I think the journey that I've been on ever since in terms of the work that I do.
The film was an outgrowth of a school assignment that your daughter Alana was given to find a picture of a family member and develop a story around that.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And she selected a picture of my mother when taken in China when she was an infant. When my daughter asked her why the photo was taken, a question I'd never asked, my mother told her very blithely, "Oh, that was for my father who left for Cuba before I was born. And I didn't meet him until I was a teenager." So my daughter comes running down the stairs, and she conveys this story to me. And I am stunned, literally stunned. First of all, I'm at that point 50 years old. It never had been mentioned in our family, ever. So I thought to myself at that moment, what else don't I know about this woman? And that was the inspiration to pursue and make this film.
Skipping generations often yields wonderful stories from grandparent to grandchild. But in your situation, do you have any thoughts on why your mother was so open with your daughter in a way that she chose not to be so open with you?
I have several ideas about it. One is that, you know, many years had passed, and I believe my mother had become more confident that she wasn't going to be deported. And in fact, through this exercise and through my experience with other parents and friends of mine whose parents were also paper sons and daughters, this is a very common theme that the parents don't talk simply because they're trying to protect us. You know, if we knew too much, then maybe we'd all be shipped back. Who knew? There was inherent in the Chinese Exclusion Acts a deep mistrust of American politics and governance. And so if people came, in fact, as paper sons and daughters, meaning that they had assumed identities, false identities, they were really illegal immigrants and therefore had to live or decided to live below the radar just to not call attention to themselves. And that expectation was passed on to the children as well. Don't rock the boat. Don't make a scene. We just want to live and succeed in this world, but we don't want to call attention to ourselves.
Felicia Lowe, filmmaker of The Chinese Couplets, tell us about your mother's experience as being a paper daughter.
Well, this was actually learned through the film, and the film basically documents my journey to find some real answers with or without her help at the beginning. That was what it was going to be, because while she was open to my daughter, she was still a little reticent to talk to me about many of these things. So I was very fortunate in that my daughter, when she went to college, continued to have conversations with her grandmother, and she actually recorded the interviews. So one day I was looking at Alana's transcript and working on the film, and I had precious few images of my mother on film. She wasn't eager to have me shoot her. And at the time that Alana did her interviews, I wasn't engaged with my mother in that way. You know, my mother, I think, was happy that her granddaughter was doing a homework assignment. She was going to help her do well in school. So Alana had the edge that way. Two, there was a very sweet connection my mother and my daughter had. In the film, you learn that I had a sister who died at the age of 8 months. And when my daughter was 8 months old, she was diagnosed with cancer. My mother and my daughter really bonded because Alana made it. And I think in many respects, Alana became that daughter who lived. So they had a special connection in that way as well. Alana's interview, her taped interviews, ended up becoming a part of my mother's story so that you could hear her life as told in her own words.
Matched with photographs that you were able to create on your trips to China and other pictures that you were able to create or obtain from sources that were not part of your family?
I came upon a box of photos that my mother was about to throw away. It ended up being an amazing collection of images of their lives, my mother and father, before they were married and before I was born. So I rescued this box of photos. I mean, I was astounded because these are the photos of the 30s and 40s. So they're really tiny little snapshots. And that we were able to blow them up to such a size as you'll see on a screen was just a saving grace. But really, you know, people are forgiving because they are older photos. But you do see people, you know, and I have never looked at photos so often and repetitively to garner images or information from these photos. And so I was very pleased that I was able to have this very vast trove, a treasure trove of images. But we were, you know, definitely, unlike some families who have home movies, we were not of that class or of that caliber that we had actually were able to have home movies. So I was happy to have these stills that I think were very valuable in helping me tell the story.
We're visiting with Felicia Low, the filmmaker, writer, producer, and director of Chinese Couplets. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Felicia, the story of your grandfather and Cuba brings a whole dimension to the film about Cuba and the reasons why people would want to leave the mainland, the Chinese homeland.
The years that my grandfather left China, there really was a time of hardship. There was civil war. There were famines. There were very hard times in China. And that also is a period that many people came to America, immigrated to America. But, of course, America had its Chinese exclusion laws, and that made it more difficult to get to America. Except unless you fit within this exempt group or you bought a paper. So that was also a time where you saw a diaspora from China to different parts of Latin America. Peru was another one of those places, all over the world, actually. But it was an unknown fact to me that there were Chinese in Cuba. You know, primarily, I think it was a combination of the fact that Cuba, at the time my grandfather left in 1920, had relaxed its own restrictions because they had a need for labor during World War I. So, as with many villages, if somebody from your village goes there, then they'll say, well, we're here, so they follow other villagers. And so there were large numbers of people from Zhongshan area where my family came from who went to Cuba. It was both a combination of the hardship of getting to America, the hardship in China, which propelled people to leave China. In reality, it turns out, in an interview I conducted with a man named Li Choi, who was named Rafael Li in Cuba, life was pretty tough in Cuba for many Chinese as well.
And in many cases, it was not much easier in California.
Exactly. There was always, I think, a very difficult situation when people were expected to go abroad, make money, send money home, sometimes to make enough money so that you can send for your people. But these were hard times everywhere. And the 30s in America was no great shakes, as we know. So there are, I guess, the point of many of the stories that I tell a universal quality about the state of our immigrant past.
As you say, the state of the immigrant past with regard to your mother is not much different from many other immigrants to the United States. And you say that your grandmother created the papers for your mother to come here so that she could survive.
My mother was one of two daughters, and my grandmother, referring back to your question, when my mother complimented me that I was like her mother, what I learned about this grandmother, whom I had known nothing about before I started making this film, was that she had the vision and will to save two daughters. In a culture that always emphasizes the importance of sons, she made a point of getting two daughters out of China during this very tumultuous period. So my mother's older sister was 18, and she married her off, basically, to a man who had come back to find a wife to take back to California. That was my aunt, who was 6 years older than my mother. For my mother, the challenge for my grandmother was to find a way to get my mother out. So while there was a black market to buy false papers for boys, there was a much limited, smaller market for opportunities to get a girl out. And that's the fascinating part of this story. The family that my grandmother heard of was returning to Hawaii, and they had a daughter who had died, who was about my mother's age. So my grandmother made a point of going to visit this family and to really pose a very challenging question. Would they take my mother in the place of this dead daughter back to Hawaii and out of China?
In the conversations with your mother about that experience, did she share with you her connection with the family that accepted her as a daughter for purposes of coming to the United States?
Well, she never talked literally about that, but as I was growing up and the pieces began to fall in place in terms of, one, why my mother always said, say I come from Hawaii, because as far as her birth certificate and her identity was concerned, she was that girl from who was born in Hawaii. But secondly, I grew up knowing Uncle Tim and Aunt Lonnie, and these were the paper family that she had traveled with. So they maintained a relationship, but these relationships were never spelled out.
And the relationship existed on a close proximity level for a short time?
Well, that family did stay in Hawaii, so it was more through correspondence, and when they would visit California, or when my mother would visit Hawaii, she would always contact them and see them.
Later in your mother's life, she achieved her goal of the American dream.
She did. She did. I think that was part of the fascination of this story, because I'm into stereotype busting, and one of the things we imagine and is immigrant from China. I identify with pink shopping bags walking through Chinatown. You know, my mother was none of that. She was not the typical immigrant lady. You know, she had aspirations, and she was hardwired in her own way to be, she was just driven to succeed and to achieve the so-called American dream. She was very ambitious and was an incredible role model for me in from that respect, though I probably wasn't conscious of it at the time I was growing up.
To what do you attribute your mother's desires that she actually was able to manifest?
You know, I think that there are some just wanting to make do better for your kids than her own experience. There certainly was that. I'm sure there had probably been a feeling of shame for the life while growing up in China, where her father wasn't sending money. that there was poverty there, and I think she wanted to turn that around to go after all the things that people wanted in those days, you know, material things that represented success. She worked hard for it. Didn't come easily. They oftentimes worked two jobs. She bought all these beauty shops that she grew into seven shops that she ran at one point. She was so ambitious that even after she sold that, she owned a liquor store for a while and then a flower shop where she learned, she taught herself how to make arrangements. From that standpoint, she just never stood still very long.
So from a personal point, Felicia Lowe, how has learning this about your mother that was kept away from you during your childhood impacted you?
Well, I think I say it best at the end of the film. You know, I finally had a full appreciation for who she was, not the mother I wish she was. Because there was a lot of time growing up that she seemed more involved and in her work than being the warm and fuzzy kind of mother that I saw on television and thought that I wanted but didn't have. Yet, as I said, her role modeling, seeing her fearlessness in some way sent me a message like, you try too. You can do it. You know, here was a woman with much less education than I had, but she had guts.
So transferring this generically to the human species, could you comment on the importance of people knowing their family history?
There was a long time in which I struggled with my mother for a need to know, my need to know and her need for privacy. And there was really, was one more important than the other? No, they're equally, she had a right to her privacy. But what I felt denied of was understanding my roots, her roots. I mean, meaning that being born here, if I didn't know anything about her past, then who we as a family were laid on my shoulder as the firstborn American born in the States. And that just felt like too heavy a burden. Not to mention that I really just wanted to know, because I really sort of came to the conclusion that, well, who am I if I don't really know who my mother is? And as I've looked back and done this research and then was able in 1979 to meet people on my father's side, it's been enriching to learn even deeper back in the history, because the Chinese keep these books, generation books, so they can date back to, on one side of the family, you know, 25 generations back. My roots go so down deep that I never considered that possibility, being born here where it seemed like it was supposed to just start with me. So that knowledge of where I come from, who my people were, truly makes me stand taller.
And the pleasure of returning with your mother to the village where she was born in China.
That was an extraordinarily special trip. It was hard for her. I know it was very hard for her. I'd never seen her so vulnerable. And that was a real eye-opener for me to see her in that state. But she had really, I think, became that girl who felt abandoned by her father. There was some part of her that just pushed that button of memory. And of course, understanding for her the struggle her mother had to go through after she left and never having seen her mother again. So it was precious and tender to be able to be there for her and with her. And I think that it certainly helped her reconcile some feelings she had, because she died within a year after that trip.
Felicia Lowe, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, could you share with us an aha or eureka moment that changed your life?
I referenced before that my daughter at 8 months had been diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, she's 33 years old now, so we all came out of it. But when you're faced with these life and death experiences, I learned something that sounds trite, but just gives me perspective. And it's this: if it's not life and death, it's not life and death.
Can you tell us what you would like to do with the rest of your one precious life?
I'd like to continue doing the work that I have done, which means that I'd like to make films or do some other creative projects that help me continue, if there is such a thing as my message, which is that there's much more we share in common than not, but we do have unique aspects that are different because of our culture or race or nationalities, whatever. But bottom line is that there's an awful lot we need to continue learning about each other to break down barriers and stereotypes so that we see each other just as human beings. I feel very lucky to have been in a position where I have been able to make films that address these topics, particularly for the Chinese American experience, because there wasn't much in the way of a library of materials of films before the idea of identity politics began to give birth in the late 60s and 70s. So because of lucky happenstance and timing, I've really been pleased that I've been able to contribute to this library of works.
And finally, Felicia Lowe, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
The thin volume by Toni Morrison called The Bluest Eye. And the reason why I love that book so much is that with economy, she tells the story of a black girl who's poor, who's had some very rough circumstances, who imagines that if she had blue eyes, her life would be perfect. And I think what always struck a chord in me and what I identified was this idea that sometimes you think life is going to be so much better if you were that white blue-eyed girl. It was a heart-wrenching to think and show how race works and how we think about race. So I just found it elegant and economical the way she impresses the idea of how racism, race, and what our aspirations are that are oftentimes misguided.
Well, Felicia Lowe, thank you so much for being with us on Radio Curious.
My pleasure.
In her film Chinese Couplets, Felicia Lowe tells the story of her mother's childhood in China, her emigration to America, and her life in California. Chinese Couplets will be shown at the Mendocino Film Festival on Saturday, May 30th, 2015, at 10 a.m. in the village of Mendocino, California. This program was recorded on May 17th, 2015. There are over 500 editions of Radio Curious on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free to listen, download, and share as you wish. The email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone is 707-462-6541. Christina Onnestad is the assistant producer, and I'm host and producer Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.